Okay. We're on page 219, 220. We're about 10 lines from the top. The first one of the line is Ha'achas. Let me see about finding it. And here's the chapter 42. So we asked a question at the beginning concerning fear of Hashem, and said that for Moshe, it's very easy to fear Hashem, and that we each have our own little Moshe inside of us, which is the spark of Elokus, the spark of godliness, which is maintains this connection to Hashem. We talked about Das. Mm. And the last time we got together, I gave a somewhat flippant insight into Das, and if you want to hear what it is, you have to go on the website and hear it. But I was reminded of a story this last week which really portrays what the concept of Das is, this idea of knowledge of being connected.
Okay.
It says there were 120 students that the Maggid of Mizritch had, which were in his quote-unquote inner circle. Mm-hmm. These are people who all became rebbes. I said when the Maggid would start zugging Torah, as they called it,
yes.
So these guys would just have fits. They would just lose themselves. They'd like have these like devakus things going on, and you know, just like start rolling on the floors. Everybody except for two people, the Alter Rebbe, who was the youngest one, and there was another person who was referred to as Der Volper Rav, the Rub of Volpa.
Okay.
I don't know what his name was. He's just referred to as Der Volper.
Uh-huh.
He was there, the Volper was there with when the Mizritch Maggid passed away, and he took it very hard.
Wow.
That here was his Rebbe, and he was now expected, they decided that they should all become Rebbes, which was the decision. They decided for like a year that the Malach, the Mizritch Maggid's son,
yeah,
would take over, but he didn't have the charismatic leadership skills of the Mizritch Maggid. His son, the Malach's son, was Yisrael of Verizon, who became a Rebbe of Rebbes also. I think there's something like 90 Rebbes that came out of Rebbe Yisrael of Verizon or something like that. And so the grandson could do it, but the son couldn't do it. So they decided that after a year, all these students of the Mizritch Maggid are going to go to the various different places and start their own Hasidic dynasties, which is where we have the decentralization of the Hasidic movement.
Mm-hmm.
The Volpe couldn't handle it. He was a student. He wasn't a rabbi. He could be a makabel. He could accept, but he couldn't. He didn't have it, and he took it really hard that this was now his place in life. And he began engaging what we refer to as self-medicating. He became an alcoholic.
Uh-huh.
And he would travel from place to place. He would spend like a day or two every place. And how he got money, Vesachnish, but every night he would get sicker. And when he would get so plastered, he would like lie on the floor, or lie on the bench, and he would just start spewing tears from the Mizritch Maggid. Because that's what he was.
Wow.
So, it once happened that he was actually traveling through, I'm not sure if it was Liadi or Liozhna, where the Alter Rebbe was, and he's in one of the outskirts of the Beis Medrash, and he got drunk, and he was lying on a bench, and he started spewing, and he passed out. One of the Hasidim of the Alter Rebbe was there, and he realized that this must be the Volper. Who else would get drunk and start, you know, just like flowing Hasidus. So he thought to himself, he's a Talmud of the Mizritch Maggid, he for sure must have Ksavim from the Mizritch Maggid. He must have writings, you know, manuscripts.
Mm-hmm.
And so he started rifling through the belongings of the Volper, who was like lying right there next to him, passed out. What'd you get? Okay. So, in the middle, the Volper woke up. He said, Ganef, what are you doing? I have something of yours, you have something of yours is in my bag? Get out of my bag. So he said, on Shulduk, I'm just, I know that, I thought that maybe you would have ksavim. Maybe you would have manuscripts. So looked at him and said, Pesi, you fool. You, that you have you, and the Rebbe, and the Hasidus are three different things. You have to have manuscripts. But by us, by the Rebbe, by the Mezitcher Magid, it was the Rebbe, the Talmud, and the Hasidus was one thing. And he said, but you got to be kidding me. He says, you don't have anything written down? He said, the Volpe said, I know everything that the Mezitcher Magid said by heart. And he said, okay, prove it, hotshot. Says the Mezitcher, he became very serious, and his face became very red, and he stood up, and he started reciting, word for word, this mimer that he heard from Mezitcher Magid 30 years prior. And this student, the Alter Rebbe, could see that the way he was doing it, that he, the Volper, had transfixed himself, and he was there, standing in front of the Magid, when he was saying it. So after he got done, he said, I don't understand. It's 30 years. How can you still have such like a connection? This is where we're bringing this whole story in. How do you have such a connection? So the Volper said to him, how come when you go to sleep at night, you don't put a note on your forehead that this is where your hat goes? Okay? You don't put a note on your jacket that the right sleeve goes on the right arm. And the right pant leg goes on the right leg. Because people don't do that. Why? It's because this is part of them. This is who they are. You don't have to forget where your hat, your head is. People don't forget where their head is. So he says, that's the same thing. That's the connection that we had to the Mezitcher Magid. Okay, that's scarier than the telephone thing, the analogy I gave last time.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. That's super scary. That's what the Alter Rebbe says here when he says that a person has to have Das of Hashem. What does Das of Hashem mean? That it's as plain as your hand. Just like, you know, and it's a weird thing though. But was it really weird? I discovered this like in eighth grade. It was one of those eighth grade things that eighth grade boys would do. Is if you look at your hand for a long time, it kind of looks like it's not yours anymore. You kind of like say, what am I looking at? It's like you lose focus of what it is. You try it at home. Don't do it here. It wastes time. Okay? But it's really pretty freaked out. But the point is that we, a person, the Alter Rebbe, demanded of us that we feel that connection to Hashem the same way like we feel our head is connected to the rest of our body. That's pretty intense. And he says now, Va'acha, there are two ways in which a person is able to achieve it. This is a very heavy, this is like the heaviest thing. The Rebbe Rashab in the Maimonim from Tuf Reish Ayin is 70 or 40 is 1910? Yeah. 1910 has half a dozen Maimarim that talk about Das and making this connection. Mm. Okay, it's like the most thorough treatise on the subject. And I'm explaining these ideas over here. Mm-hmm. So he says there's two ways that a person has to work on themselves in order to be able to achieve Das. One way is by working on your physical body. Mm. And the other way is by working with your soul. He says, how does a person work with their physical body? So he starts. The first one line is Ha'achas. Like I say, it's like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. It's about 10 lines down from the top. Ha'achas hi yegiyas basar. The first thing that a person has to do is really work on their flesh. Levatish es haguf, to cast down the body. Ulahachniya, and to subjugate it. Shelo yichsheich al ha'or ha'nefesh, so that it shouldn't obscure the light of the soul. Now, that sounds like Musar. Subjugating bodies, downcasting bodies, you can say the same question to be asked when it talks about in the Bustle of Gani Maimarim that we're learning at this time, especially in the Rebbe brings out in his explanation of the second parak of Bustle of Gani when it talks about Kadis Kafi Sitrahi Yastalik Yakar Likucha Brichu Becholo Almin, that when the forces of evil are subjugated, the glory of God is elevated through all worlds. And the Rebbe in Tafshin Lamed Beis describes the difference between his skafia and his hapcha. It's an interesting thing. His hapcha is usually attributed to tzaddikim, although we can do his hapcha on a little baby way too. And we talked before about his hapcha, like the Alter Rebbe taking the vitality of Napoleon's army because he changed around the marching song into a niggun. Okay, that's Rebbe Shea's hapcha. But we have his hapcha too, a little bit. Like, for example, you have a piece of meat, and you put the meat into the challah, and you're eating the challah to cover Shabbos Kodesh. So that's called his hapcha. You've converted this piece of mundane meat into a mitzvah. That really is his hapcha. So the Rebbe explains, and the Maimer in Tafshin Lamed Bey says, and that's not such a great thing. Why? Because it was a piece of meat before Shabbos, and now that it's on Shabbos and you're eating it, what is it?
It's a piece of
meat. It's still a piece of meat. You didn't change its metzias. You didn't change what it is. Right. It's still what it is. The only difference is that you changed its life force, where it's coming from. No, you put that. But it's still basically the same piece of meat. Looks the same. You would analyze it. It would look the same. But now it's got a different source to it. Now it's the conveying a mitzvah. How much of a mitzvah is it conveying? However much it is. If it's a 1 pound piece of meat, you've got 1 pound of godliness there. So the evidence is something very interesting. Says that, however, if a person does a skafia means I don't need it. So, how much, when a person says I don't need it and they walk away from it, what have they done? They've totally and completely mevatel the metzius of the thing. They're not using it in that term, in that situation, and therefore it loses its parameters of its identity. It loses its limits. And therefore, since it's lost its limits, it can convey the infiniteness of Hashem. It's sort of like it's looking at it backwards from what you would normally be accustomed to looking at. Mm-hmm. So then you could ask the question, but wait a minute. Chassidus doesn't say live a life of denial. That's not us. We don't believe in aesthetics. We believe in utilization. So how then is this going to be, where does this kafia fit into utilization? Okay, there is. One of the rabbis who's in the Lubavitcher Yeshiva in New York, who would be correctly referred to as a balbusser. This guy, I guess you would call him corpulent. And he would say that in our days, iskafia means 4 cookies, not 5 cookies. Okay, that was his interpretation of it. I'm going to disagree with the rabbi. He's a lot older than I am, and he's a lot smarter than I am, but I'm going to disagree. That with us, we talked about it before, when we say that we're going to live a life of denial, what we're denying is our gluttonous approach to it. We will utilize it. I'm going to use this to serve Hashem. Mm. Okay, so now that I've mevatled its metzias, it is not something which is, I'm eating it because it's delicious. I'm eating it because I'm serving Hashem. Mm. So now it's lost its whole entity as being what it was. Uh-huh. Okay? So that's what he says now. That's sort of like the idea when he says when a person has to break their body. I told the story here before about a friend of mine who was learning with me in Morristown. Before he came to Morristown, he was learning in a Misnagash Balachuva Yeshiva in New York. Mm-hmm. And we decided he's going to stay in Morristown. You remember this story? Maybe not. Okay, so
I don't think he saw this.
So he wrote the Rebbe all the things that he his seder has avoided from the other yeshiva, all the things he used to do in his other place, and which things he should keep and adopt to stay, you know, change, drop, keep, etc., etc. So one of the things that he wrote over there is that in that yeshiva, all the Bachrim fast on Mondays and Thursdays in order to be able to control their passions. This is one of the things that he wrote. Right. So the Rebbe crossed that out and wrote, this is counterproductive. This is what the Rebbe really focused on in his letter over here. Counterproductive. Because why? It's not going to break a person's passions, but on the contrary, it'll have a reverse effect. Because what? The person's going to say, look at me, I'm fasting Mondays and Thursdays. What a big shot I am. And then in addition to that, he's not going to be able to learn so well because he's fasting. He's going to say, I got an excuse. I can't learn so good today because I'm fasting. And then on top of that, what happens when the fast is over at night? Most likely, because he fasted the whole day, he's going to say, oh, I get to eat more than I would have eaten if I hadn't fasted. So he said, forget about it. If he says, if you want to learn how to control your passions, leave the last mouthful on the plate. Which is, by the way, a din in Shulchan Aruch. Do you know that was a din in Shulchan Aruch? Yeah. The din in Shulchan Aruch, you have to leave the last mouthful on your plate to show that we're not from the Katnei Amuna. It's in the back of the Shulchan Aruch. It's an Alter Rebbe, but in the back, and like the last volume over there, I think. To say that we believe that Hashem is going to provide for us for another meal, we don't have to consume everything now. We trust that Hashem is going to take care of us. Okay, but he's saying, don't eat the last mouthful, because listen, however full you are now, the last mouthful is not going to make you any fuller. But what does that do? I'm leaving it on the plate, because I'm in control. I want to eat it, but I'm not going to. So he once confided to me and said he wished he never would have written it to the Rebbe, because fasting on Monday and Thursday is easier than leaving over the last mouthful on the plate. And you understand, because you're in it, it tastes good, you want to eat it, you're thinking to yourself, I'm going back for seconds anyway.
Yeah.
No. So you got to stop, stop, be a mensch. You're in control. Which we talked about way back in chapter 29. Mm-hmm. Okay, so so that's called breaking the body according to the Chassidus. We're not into like fasting, rolling into the snow, self-flagellation, all that kind of stuff. That's not us. But he says you have to break the body. To break it and to subjugate it so that it shouldn't obscure the light of the soul. Because what happens now, what do you call a person who is in control of himself and is not driven by their passions? Either one of two things. Either dead or holy. Yes. This guy's a holy dude.
You bet.
He's in control. And I tell people there's 5 seconds to holiness. Because this is where Escafi really comes in. Because you can't fool yourself. Do I need this thing? Could be you're hungry. You're cholishing. Your blood sugar's low. You got a headache because you haven't eaten. You push it, you need to eat. If you don't eat, you're not going to be able to go serve Hashem. So that's good. Fine. So eat, not because you have a headache, because your blood sugar's low, because you're hungry. Eat because the current situation in which you find yourself, you're not able to serve Hashem properly. And once you consume this thing, you will be able to serve Hashem properly. Mm-hmm. A person who can stop and think that for 5 seconds, especially if they're hungry. A person goes, I'm hungry. If they can stop themselves and say, I'm not eating this because I'm hungry. I'm eating this because I'm doing it to serve Hashem. They have just broken their body. That's the Hasidic way of breaking the body.
Okay, what's the difference between saying it?
Just saying it enough. No.
Saying it, meaning it.
No. Just saying it already is you're stopping yourself.
I see.
As soon as you stop yourself, you don't have to really do so much. You can, you know, okay.
I hear. You're saying just the stopping is, okay, fine. I get it.
Yeah, when I was in Seattle, there was a bacher who used to eat 4 big pieces of cake before davening. And you could see the way that he was eating it. at every single mouthful he would debate, do I need to eat this? Do I not need to eat it? And he was like, and he would pop that shelf, 4 pieces of cake every day. But he could see the avoid on his face. Do I need it? Do I not eat it? And he was genuinely hungry and needed to eat before davening. And maybe it was, it took 4 pieces of cake. Listen, you know, maybe he had a high metabolism. Who knows what it was? One more story that we're involved with the Rebbe. These, if I should go through all, like I say, I should go through all my tapes that I have to see where I was. It says that there's a, when the Rebbe was living in Paris, it was in 1940. So it was an extremely hot summer in Paris. In Paris, in the summertime, when it's hot, it's in the hundreds. Mm-hmm. And the Rebbe, being a one of those Hasidic tzaddik types, would walk around wearing a coat and hat, even when it was 100 degrees outside. Mm-hmm. Okay, so he came in and somebody offered him a glass of water. And the Rebbe took the glass of water, and he stopped and he looked at it, and he said, with one glass of cold water, you could lose 15 years of working on yourself. Okay, so much so. I mean, this guy, it could, it's serious, you don't hydrate yourself in such weather. I mean, it's serious business over here. But why is he drinking it? He's drinking it not just to slake his thirst, he's drinking it to serve Hashem, ultimately. So that's what he calls levatish is the gufalach niyai, to break the body, to subjugate it. Kamoshi's always saying, we're sure the gufa delay salik beina her nishmasum evachinle. As it says, we compare the Zohar says over there, if you have a block of wood that fire doesn't catch on it because it's too thick, what do? You splinter it.
Splinter it.
So a body that the soul doesn't catch on to it, so you splinter it. As he says, for example, through thoughts of tshuva. Okay, but for that, we're talking about developing das. So this is a whole process. So the Alter Rebbe says that a person should spend a certain amount of time. He talked about this in chapters 26 and 31. That a person should schedule a time to yell at themselves and think of all the terrible things that they did from then until now, which for a person to be a master of account, that's already, as he says, mara de chushpana, is a good thing. A person should know, a person should do tshuva, a certain person should feel bad that they did something wrong till now and that they're going to correct it from now on. But as one of my teachers in Marstown used to say, but get over it. Don't keep beating yourself up for it already. You did tshuva. Yeah. And says, David HaMelech said, V'chatasi negdi sami, my souls are constantly before me. And Alter Rebbe explains that means that when you do tshuva, you now become a new metzias. And you might have an edler level of tshuva to do. Okay, so now do the edel level of tshuva. But don't beat yourself up for what you did yesterday.
Right.
I did that tshuva yesterday. I'm not going to do it again from what I did yesterday. Right. That's done already.
Right.
Okay, I gotta go weiter with my life. Go forward.
Yeah.
Okay, if it requires more edelkeit, good, so I'll become my edel. No one's ever accused me of being edel.
So once you become edel, then worry about that edel.
Yeah, then worry about it then.
Yeah. I got a ways to go.
The shame is the second thing the person should do. And this is not first do this, then do that. Uh-huh. This is simultaneous.
Do this and do that.
Correct. Mm-hmm. The second way to reach, because what we're trying to do is achieve knowledge, achieve a feeling of connection to Hashem. So if a person can get the physical coarseness of the body out of the way, so what happens then is that the physical body itself appreciates godliness.
Mm.
The second way, I don't know which one's easier, which one's harder. Who yagiyas hanafish, to work on his soul. It says that he should do, he should engage in an aveda to work on himself and to concentrate and to meditate in the greatness of Hashem for a long time. That's the idea. Shagadela Ritzufa. We're not talking about a fleeting moment. Okay? Okay, it doesn't say how long. It doesn't mean a big hour. Sit there for an hour. If you can, the ideal is work up to 5 minutes. We're going to call that, for us, the Rebbe Rishab, I said, mentioned this, I don't know, 3-4 weeks ago. The Rebbe Rishab said that's a long time for us. That a person should actually sit and think about Hashem for 5 minutes before davening. Whew, this guy's a special dude. Okay, and we're going to call that Shagadoylu Ritzufa, a long consecutive time. Kishir Shazu Ena Shava B'chol Nefesh. And this is not, he says, it's not everybody gets the same amount of time. You have those people that as soon as they think about Hashem, they become totally and completely blown away by godliness, just totally and completely enamored with it, or totally and completely afraid of Hashem. As explained right in the first paragraph of Shulchan Aruch. So what does it say over there? Everybody knows that when a person wakes up, there should be Ois Kenema, Raz Kitzvi, Kalka Kenesher, etc., Gibur Ka'ari, and all these things that you should be. So what is it going to do? Yeah, as soon as he wakes up, the person should already be cognizant that there's a big Hashem out there who's watching him lying in bed, saying, hello. Okay, so that's you have such a person. You have a story with the Chayz of Lublin. The Chayz of Lublin was the same age as the Alter Rebbe, and I think the birthdays were very close to each other, if I'm not mistaken. Or maybe the Chayz was born in Nisan and the Alter Rebbe was born in Elul, but they were both 17 years old when they came to the Alter Rebbe, to the Mezrit Shemagid. So the first day that the Chayza shows up in town, the Mezrit Shemagid had Yahrzeit. And it was sort of like an off day as far as people being there, because the Mezrit Shemagid didn't have a minyan. Which to me sounds really strange. Wow. That how is it that the Rebbe should have Yahrzeit and be davening from the Amud, and he didn't have a minion? And what the story is even stranger is that he lost the minion by Hu Elokeinu.
Really?
Somebody left. Wow. After the first Kaddish. After the Kaddish Yassim. So, oh, I gotta go. Sorry, Reb. And off he went. And now he's stuck with 9 people. Okay? Very mud. I just can't imagine such a thing happening to a Rebbe. You know, so they went looking for a tenth. They said they couldn't find anyone. It's, you know, they found this young man. So the Mezrit Shemagid said, not him, he's a batlan. Go find somebody else. This is okay. Nobody else is around. So Mezrit Shemagid said, okay, fine. So Mezrit Shemagid turned around, faced, you know, towards the Yamid, and said, Hu Elokeinu. And the Chayz of Lublin fainted. He says, it causes a whole commotion. Somebody faints in shul like this. And he says, I told you, he's a batlan.
What's a batlan?
Batlan normally means ne'er-do-well. Uh-huh. But the word batlan comes from the word bottle, meaning nullified. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. The Chayz of Lublin was called the Chayz of Lublin. The word Chayz means one who can see. Uh-huh. When he says, what I said, Hu Elokeinu, he saw Hu Elokeinu, or Ein Kelokeinu.
And he fainted.
He saw Ankel again, there's nobody like a shot. He fainted. Okay? So you have some people of such degrees that as soon as they start thinking about Hashem, the switch is on. They're good.
Yeah.
You they don't need a whole lot of prep. These are the type of people that you hate. Anyway. as it says, what does it say in the Shulchan Aruch? She is born in Ha'adam. And when a person's going to think, Shahamalach HaGadol, Melech Malchim, Melech HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Vashtat, the King of Kings, Asher Malach Al Ha'aretz Kevaydeh, whose glory fills the world, Aymed Alav, is standing right by him, V'raya B'maisav, and standing right there. Because the Shulchan Aruch gives a parable. What would be, you know, we have this, the advent of the snooze button. Okay, the button, the alarm clock goes off, you roll over, you hit the snooze button, and you happen to be aware that there's a king standing at the foot of your bed. Okay, so what do? You look at the king and you say, I'm good, king, nine more minutes.
Just hang on, just give me
just a... stand there right there, I'm good, I'll be up in 9 minutes.
Just 9 minutes, yeah, just 9 more minutes.
Okay,
yeah.
So you're not going to do that. Citizens, what should you do? Get out of bed. As soon as you're aware that that it's time to get up, get up. And get up how? Knowing that Hashem is looking at you, and Hashem is like a king, and Hashem is for sure at the foot of your bed. Okay, unless you have to start playing games with your Yetzirah that you say, listen, I really want to wake up at a quarter after six. But in order for me to wake up at a quarter after six, I have to set the alarm for 6:06. Because what's going to happen? The alarm's going to go off at 6:06. My Yetzirah says, oh, hit the snooze button. And then when it goes off the second time, a quarter after six, so now I get up. If it works. So, but our Yetzirah is not so stupid.
He
says, oh, you want to get up a quarter after six. Ha ha. You put it, if you push it down, you can still get up at 6:22, 6:24. You can still get up then. Hey. V'yesh nefesh shafela b'tiv v'tel dasa m'makar chaytzava m'madrigas v'tachtein b'yitzirus tasiyu. Then you have other souls. They're lower by nature from birth. Their source is hewn out from the lower levels of the 10 spheres of the world of action. And they really can't really concentrate and focus on godliness. They just haven't got a spiritual IQ. So he said way back when, this is who the Tanya is written for.
Oh, goody.
The Tanya is not written for the person who's got it easy.
There's hope for me.
The Tanya is written for this person who's got a soul from Malchus of Asiya Ruchnius, whose soul is right there at the bottom, who's gone through all of the filters and all the drags and all the whatever and all the leftovers, and that's his soul. Okay?
From the germs of the dust.
Yes, indeedy. The dross, as it may be.
Indeed, yes.
Oh, Ki'im b'kushi b'chazaka. This guy really has to toil at it. He's got to focus on it. And it's just like everything else. We said this, not that long ago.
Yeah.
I can't ask you to bench press 500 pounds.
You can ask.
But I could tell you, listen, work up to it. Start this week with 50 pounds. And keep doing 50 pounds until 50 pounds seems like it's no big deal.
Yeah.
And then go up to 60 pounds. And do that for a while. And then after how many years, whatever it'll be, you'll be an old man with a long white beard. Yeah. But you'll be bench pressing 500 pounds.
Right.
Exactly. Okay? So it's the same thing also. The Rebbe Rishab said, work up to 5 minutes of thinking about Hashem before davening.
Yeah.
Okay? Which means what? 10 seconds. Let's see if I can do it for 10 seconds. I can think about Hashem without thinking about anything else. And then when I can start thinking about 10 seconds, so I can do that for like a couple of days in a row, and say, okay, I can do that, and let's move it up to 15 or 20 seconds. And go up in small increments.
Yeah.
Okay? B'chazaku b'prat im hatuma b'chatas narayim sh'avaynus mavdilim kulu. And it could be that this person, the reason why he has so much trouble thinking about godliness is because he's handicapped himself. By all of the wild things that he did as a youngster. Because we know that has an effect on the person. But that's what he said before. That's we're going to put yourself into a flowchart over here. If a person says, listen, I want to do this hachanas, hachnaas, hanefesh, I want to really bring out my nefesh. I want to do the second way the Alter Rebbe said. And emphasizing the soul. But I have a problem. Is my body doesn't allow my soul to function so good because of all the ways that I messed up in the previous whenevers. So this is good. No, if that be the case, then so instead of the flowchart going down, the flowchart's going to go off to the right with an arrow shooting back up, and it's going to say, go back to working on your body. Because what's going to happen is yes, it's true that when a person does a misdeed, it has a physical effect on their bodies so that they become insensitive to Elikus. But when they do tshuva, it makes them more sensitive to Elikus. So if the person can't think about Hashem without being plagued by all the other thoughts that are permeating his brain, let him go do tshuva for a couple of minutes and then come back and we'll see. And tshuva doesn't mean beating yourself over the head. Tshuva means I feel sorry for what I did till now and I hope to do better in the future. Just that itself is going to change the physical composition of a person's body. Just that person feeling that, you can say it from today till tomorrow, but the person has to actually feel it. He feels bad for what he did. He's going to hopefully do better in the future. So that actually does have a physical effect on the person. So that now, so what can he do? It was, oh, no, look, I can do 20 seconds now. Without, of course, patting yourself on the back. Yeah. It's self-defeating. But the person who...
Sure.
The Friedrich Rebbe went to visit Vienna. I think it was with his father, when his father was in the early 1900s. Mm. And there was like a large Yekke community over there. Maybe it was in Carlsbad. He was also in Carlsbad, which is a resort town with a hot springs. So the Rebbe Rishab went there. I'm not sure what the Rebbe Rishab's ailment was, per se. I know he died of typhus, but what was the deal?
Yeah.
Rebbe Rishab died of typhus. But he was sick for a long time before the typhus. Mm. Physical ailments, physical aches and pains. So I went to Carlsbad to go sit in the hot baths. So there was a German Jew that was there, a Yekke, they're called. Now, Yekkes have a nature of being very exact. Everything is in is like right to the minute. In a Yekke minion, it says 7 o'clock, you'll have guys standing there at 6:59, staring at the sweep second hand. And as soon as it hits the 12, they start. Mm. That's the way the Yekkes are. Okay. So the Friedrich Rebbe was talking with them. He was talking, you know, for bragging about them, and talked about thinking about godliness, especially by the word Echad in Shema. Mm-hmm. Should stop for a second and think about what you're doing. So the Friedrich Rebbe came back the next year, and one of the people who was at his for bragging the year before confided in him that Rebbe, I'm able to think for exactly a minute about Echad. Okay, so thinking exactly about the figure of the rest, well, it kind of defeats the purpose if you're thinking for exactly a minute. Okay, it's a good thing, but you're supposed to get ahead of yourself.
Exactly a minute.
Yep.
Not 58 seconds, yep. 63 seconds.
Exactly a minute. Yes. Yeah. It's an old joke, is what do you get when you cross a Lubavitcher and a Yekke? You get somebody who comes exactly a half hour late.
Yes.
Anyway. Down about a bit of page.
I'm so sad. So true.
Makal Makayim, three lines in the bottom. Bikshu, or Bikushi v'chazakit, Yitzchazik ma'oy ma'kshavta ba'oymet v'yigiyya rabba va'oymet gadol. The person puts up a fight. He says, no, I'm not going to let this go so fast.
Yeah.
I'm not just going to resign myself to saying, I have a low soul, I have a thick body, I don't have the tools or the talents in order to do this. Because if the Alter Rebbe says quite clearly, you do have the tools and the talents. Mm-hmm. But what? You're going to have to, some people might have to put a lot of effort in it. Mm. La'amek yedaylus Hashem shagid dayla bevadi tegiya alav al kopanim hayira tata. That if a person's really going to put themselves into it, they're going to experience this fear and love of what we're talking about. At least, at the very least, the lower level of fear, which he said before, and he'll talk about more, is a fear based on our perception, as opposed to the lower level of love, is a love based on our perception. Hmm. He's going to talk about that soon. Remember, Zalya Gaitim Mitzalsitamin, one of the famous 12 Pesukim. Why did the Rebbe in 1976 pick this Maimer Chazal? You know how many Maimer Chazals there are in all the works from the Mishnah on? How about zillions?
Plus or minus.
Yeah. So the Rebbe picked two from Tanya. And he picked, I don't know, three or four, I can't, on the top of my head, I can't think right now, from Gemara and Medrash, these type of places. So why did he pick Yegaiti Umetzasi Tamim as one of the 12 Pesukim that little kids should know? Because that's exactly what the Tanya is for. That a person says, I worked hard and I wasn't successful, don't believe them, they didn't work hard enough. A person who says, I was successful without working hard, don't believe them either because they weren't successful. But if a person says, I was successful because I worked hard, that person you could believe. And that person, that statement is talking to every single person. Because everybody has their level of working hard. And everybody has their own level of success.
Right.
So it could very well be that even once this person is able to sit and think about godliness for 5 minutes straight without thinking about anything else, that his perception and his awareness and sensitivity, is it going to be like Moshe or Rabbi Akiva or the Alter Rebbe? No. He'll be on his level, which is 100% okay.
Which is perfectly where it's supposed to be.
Exactly. As it says, if you seek her as silver and search for her as a hidden treasure.
That's right.
Okay.
It's from Misha, yeah?
Yeah, he thinks there's no footnote on it. Okay, that what? That he explains the analogy. He says, then what's going to be the outcome is you will understand the fear of Hashem. It's 11, yes, that's a Proverbs, yes, Mishali.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, meaning, Kedere shemechapesh adam matmai v'itzer hatamain betachti sa'aretz. Just like it is, the nature of a person is, if he knows there's a treasure hidden someplace, underground even, he's going to go, v'chayfer achav yegiva atzuma, he's going to go and dig, really put a lot of effort into digging to go find this treasure. So that's the story with Moses Montefiore and the Western Wall. There, Moshe Montefiore lived in the late 1700s, early 1800s, went to Eretz Yisrael. He was fabulously wealthy. Which is why there are so many things, even in New York, which are named Montefiore.
Really?
Montefiore Cemetery, where the Friedrich Rebbe is buried. There's Montefiore Hospital up in the Bronx. And there's like a zillion Montefiore funeral homes all around the world. And there's a Montefiore campus of something out of one of the universities in Eretz Yisrael. So who's Moshe Montefiore? I mean, he was the one, the famous windmill, which is located outside of the old city, was built by Moshe Montefiore to get people to move outside of the old city because the old city was too crowded. But they were all living inside because they had a wall and they were all afraid of the Arabs that were living around them. Okay, that, the name of the section of Jerusalem that I just forgot is something Moshe. Come on, Yamin Moshe. It's on the right of the old city, and it was made, built by Moshe Montefiore, the whole neighborhood. Up until 1967, it was a no man's land because it was so close to the partition line, anybody who walked there would get shot. But now it's a high-scale neighborhood. So, very high-scale neighborhood. So, anyway, so he went to Yerushalayim to look for the area where the Kotel was. So he's walking around the streets, the old streets of Yerushalayim, and he sees this Arab woman dump her garbage on this one spot. And he asks her, why you dump your garbage over here? He says, I don't know. I dumped my garbage here, my mother dumped her garbage here, my grandmother dumped their garbage here too. What was the deal? In the times of Titus, they couldn't knock down the retaining wall. So Titus said, I can't knock it down. Well, you'll explain why he couldn't knock it down. It's some kind of miracle, some kind of way it was constructed. You're talking about, I mean, there are stones in the Western Wall that are the size of a bus.
Right.
Yeah. Okay, and weigh 80,000 pounds, no exaggeration, and they don't know how they got them there.
Yeah.
Okay, you can't knock down such a stone. Okay, so he ordered that this site be turned into a garbage dump. They'll bury it. It can become a landfill. What happens to dirt as the garbage that decomposes? It turns to
dirt. Right.
Okay. So he figures this must be the place where the kotel is. So he starts digging. So someone, an Arab, comes up to him and says, "What are you doing over here? How come you dig a plane in the trash?" So he says, "I'm from England, and I have a treasure map, and the treasure map marks it right here." So the guy says, "What are you talking about? That's nuts. This is a garbage dump. It's been a garbage dump as long as anybody can remember." He says, "Okay, you'll see, whatever." So what did he do? He took out a couple of gold coins, and he stuck them in the dirt, and he started jumping up and down. "I found gold, I found gold, I found gold." Okay? And now the Arabs couldn't read. They didn't know that these were English ducats, you know, that had been recently minted. They just see there's a gold coin.
Gold coin. So they start digging.
Okay, so everybody started digging. Okay, and they dug a lot. And then that night, after everybody was all at home, he took some more ducats and stuck them in the ground.
Yeah.
Okay, so people came by and the next day they found some more ducats. And I hope I'm pronouncing that right. And they dug some more. And they dug and dug and dug and dug and dug until they found the coastal Moravi. That's how it was first excavated.
I love it.
Okay, so the thing is you gaiti matzasi tamim, if it's worth having, you're going to dig for it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's in here. This Moshe that he's talking about, that's deeply hidden inside of us. It's there. We're guaranteed it's there. We'll put an X marks the spot.
Think I could fool my Yetzer Hara with a few gold coins?
Yeah, no. Yetzer Hara's too smart for that. Uh-huh. You have to come up with something else.
You have to come up with something smarter. Okay, fine. Good enough.
You have to fool it with like some really good honey and a cup of tea as you're sitting and learning the Tanya.
Uh-huh. Very good.
Uh-huh.
It's having a small effect.
Come for the tea.
Maybe we'll have some Tanya.
Yeah. So too also, a person has to put in the same effort, such awesome toil to reveal the treasure house. This is not just a little tiny thing that's kind of stuck in the back over there. You know, we're not talking about a gold ducat. We're talking about an entire treasure house of Yerushalayim, which is hidden and concealed. But Venus Halev, in the recesses, in the understanding of the heart, shall call Adam Yisrael, everybody, because this is what defines us as Jews. What is it about Jews? Is that we have this innate relationship with Hashem, whether we're aware of it or not. And what? Bring it out to the forefront. Shall kol Adam Yisrael shehu b'chinas madrega shelamayla ma'azman. And this relationship that we have with Hashem, that he's calling this precious storehouse, is beyond the reaches of time.
Mm.
Meaning to say, let's say a person's 70 years old and he's living his whole life, and suddenly one day he happens to pick up a Tanya in English in some bookstore or some library someplace. Mm. And he looks at it and says, this is really pretty interesting.
Mm.
And he reads through it. How do you read a book from a library? You knock it off. Listen, you only got 3 weeks to go through the whole thing.
Yeah.
And he gets up to chapter 42 and he sees this. And it's, even he can do it.
Mm.
It is, and in, what makes it hard, though, is, and there's no excuse.
Mm.
This is the natural love which is hidden inside every single Jew. But in order to bring it out into action, to actually bring it into something that is, listen, you can say, do you fear Hashem? Yeah, I fear Hashem. Yeah, prove it. Fearing Hashem means that the person is going to turn away from doing bad in his action, his in a greater level in his speech, and in a greater level not even to think anything wrong.
His thoughts, yeah.
Let's, and how is he going to do that? Sarach legalosim et sofanya bevinas alev shalomayla ma'azan alevia levachinas ma'ashava ma'amisha b'mayach. Take it out of the recess. Take it out of the subconscious. Even though that's such an eternal connection. And bring it up to the forefront. Bring it into the conscious psyche. La'amik ba ma'ashavtei meshech zman ma'amish. And think about it with your thoughts. So that it's able to work it what it's supposed to do. To come from the potential, which is what it is, the sphere of Hashem, is a potential while it's latent within the soul of a person, and to bring it out into Maisa Bepoil. That you can see that this person is what you would refer to as a Yerushalayim, one who is a God-fearing person. Sur mirava asei teva makshava dibur ma'isav ifnei Hashem haitzeifu umavet umazin umakshivu mevin al kol ma'iseu. Because why? Because he's doing this. Because he's bringing it out and from into thought, speech, and action. Because Hashem is gazing and looking and checking him and understands all of his deeds. Ublechin klayoisav, and he's checking through his kidneys. As if you'll have Hashem checking through your kidneys.
Indeed.
Yeah, the kidneys, it says, Kloyos Yoitzes. Kidneys are the advisors to the to the liver, is what it's referred to. And the liver is what governs our action. Valiba and his heart. Marizal, he's talking about Shoshu Dvarim Kulu. As it says, if you look at three things, you'll never come to do a sin. Eye in Raya, there's an eye that sees. Eyes and shamayas, there's an ear that hears. The kol nichtav b'sefer, and everything's written down.
Everything's written down.
And that's where we're going to stop. We got up to page 222, where it says, eyes and shamayas, about 10 lines from the bottom of the page. To be continued.